From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, September 18th, 2019.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by the Dempsey Challenge. Run, walk, or bike this September to help the Dempsey Center support those impacted by cancer. DempseyChallenge.org. And Douglas Ridge, a Unity Technologies eco-conservation subdivision in Brunswick, committed to net zero home design. More at douglasridge.com.
Central Maine Power has submitted a last-minute request to change the route of the controversial power line it's proposing for Western Maine. The Portland Press-Herald is reporting that the change would avoid Beatty Pond in northern Franklin County. Last week, state regulators deadlocked on whether CMP's proposed power line through Western Maine would have unreasonable impacts on that remote pond. The group Mainers for Health and Parental Rights has submitted some 78,000 signatures certified by local registrars to suspend the state's new vaccine law until the voters have their say on the issue next spring. Supporters of the law are vowing a fight to keep it. Mal Leary has details.
At issue, legislation passed earlier this year by the legislature which mandates certain vaccinations for children attending public and private schools in Maine. Opponents say it's an example of government imposing its judgment on a matter that should be left for parents to decide. The new law eliminates exceptions for personal or religious reasons, but does still allow an exemption for medical reasons. Supporters of the legislation say it's needed to protect the public from potentially serious diseases and have created a political action committee to defend the measure. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Several people's veto efforts have not met today's deadline to submit signatures to state elections officials. Among them was an attempt to block a new law that requires state-funded and private insurance to cover legal abortion services. Also missing the signature deadline were opponents of a new law that allows state-licensed physician assistants and advanced practice registered nurses to provide abortion services. In a statement noting today's missed deadline, ACLU of Maine Executive Director Allison Bie says these new laws affirm that abortion is health care and that everyone should have access to the health care they need. Among other people's vetoes efforts that fell short, one that would have overturned a new law that allows terminally ill adults in Maine to end their own lives, one that would undo a prohibition on the use of conversion therapy on minors, and another measure that would have blocked Maine's new presidential primaries. In weather tonight, clear and cold with frost everywhere but along the coast and lows in the 30s. Tomorrow, warming up with sunny skies and a few clouds in the northwest, highs in the mid-60s to mid-70s. In case you haven't noticed, heavy downpours are increasing in the Northeast. In fact, according to the Environmental Protection Agency, they have increased by 70% since 1958. A heavy downpour is defined as a storm that produces 2 or more inches of water in 24 hours. And as temperatures warm, scientists are predicting they'll become more frequent and more intense. To help prepare for more rain, crews have just finished an unusual 13-year survey of road stream crossings and culverts. Susan Sharon has more.
With heavy rain comes the risk of more flash flooding, like this 2017 event that surprised and overwhelmed a Waterford, Maine campground when a pair of culverts failed.
Anybody got a boat?
Video from the flash flood that cut off part of the campground was later shared on YouTube. But inadequately sized culverts are hardly unusual. And that's why survey crews from the Nature Conservancy, with support from the state and other organizations, have been checking out thousands of road stream crossings and culverts around the state for the past 13 years. All their findings have been entered into a massive database that can highlight where there may be problem areas.
The scientists among us certainly love to have this data, but really it's not about that. It's about trying to have healthier streams.
Alex Abbott is a stream restoration specialist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He says the database contains about 26,000 records, making Maine one of the most comprehensively surveyed jurisdictions anywhere.
I like to think about our watersheds in Maine as living creatures, and the rivers and streams are their veins and arteries. And these stream crossings frequently represent blockages in those veins and arteries, much like our bodies have blockages and we put stents in them.
In the case of streams, culverts can serve as stents, funneling heavy flows of water as well as fish. But the key for restoration and resiliency is for them to be wide enough to handle big storms. That's where Hadley Corot and Caroline Hill come in.
It's an earthen opening in the ground.
Near the town of Hebron in western Maine, Corot and Hill take measurements of a stream crossing in some thick woods using what Corot calls her stream crew Jedi sword, essentially a large measuring stick to gauge water depth and width.
Water depth, 0.5.
Water depth, 0.5.
Water width, 2.3.
Water width, 2.3. Okay. Are there any internal
This year alone, the two women and two other crews surveyed 1,200 stream crossings and logged well over 1,000 miles on the road each month. By the end of September and the completion of the 13-year project, they will have surveyed 95% of the stream crossings in the state.
We've never been lost. Our tablets have GPS, and so we can, on the maps, we can see a little blue dot that shows where we are all the time. So we always know where we are.
Along the way, they've camped out in the North Woods and met people who live, work, and hunt in their midst. Many of them have offered up places for them to stay. Corot says she's been pleasantly surprised by how much they support the work.
Not because they care passionately about culverts, but because they understand what impact it has on the environment that they grew up in and that they feel connected to. I mean, we've had trophy hunters that have put us up in cabins because they know the connection between waterways and fish and bear and moose.
Hill and Corot kept journals of the wildlife they observed in the woods while they surveyed stream crossings this summer. 30 moose, 7 bears, 6 fox, and several turtles. It's one of the benefits of their unusual job. Last year, they built a culvert in Brownville from the ground up.
Came to us in giant sheets of aluminum, and we spent a week hand-screwing over 1,200 nuts and bolts to put the thing together. Yeah, it was great.
And the work of the survey crews is of particular interest to Benjamin Matthews, a watershed restoration specialist with the Nature Conservancy in Maine, who uses the data to help plan for the future. His own focus is on fish passage.
So I've done an analysis to look at the flood-prone culverts are in the state so that I can go to towns and say, hey, I've got a problem for fish here that I want to help you with. You've got a problem for your road as well. So we can join these two things and really fix both of those problems at the same time.
Culverts that fail can pose problems for motorists, but also for emergency responders, delaying ambulance and fire services. And they can also cost cities and towns hundreds of thousands of dollars to replace and repair damaged roads, which is why Matthews says it makes economic sense to plan ahead for severe storms. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
It is often reported that the Gulf of Maine's waters are warming faster than 99% of the largest saltwater bodies on the planet. But scientists will tell you the trend can be volatile. This year, for instance, surface water temperatures in the Gulf have been the coolest since 2008. That may be providing some relief for some of the Gulf's historic species. But as Fred Bever reports, ongoing climate change means their long-term prospects are still uncertain.
Lobsterman Seth Duby fishes 400 traps from his boat, the Allison Nicole, out of Camp Ellis in Saco.
Off and on most of my life. My father did it, my grandfather, and now me, and hopefully my boy.
This has been a good decade for Duby and the rest of Maine's lobster fleet, with record catches most years since 2010. But this year, the beginning of the big summer harvest, when lobsters molt, shedding their old hard shells to reveal new soft shells, was slow. Lobstermen and some scientists associate that with cooler water temperatures earlier this year.
And it's still not all that great. I mean, it's all right fishing, but it hasn't been no record breaker, that's for sure. Prices stayed up pretty good.
Some lobstermen say they are beginning to see some improvement in the harvest this month, reminiscent of what was traditionally called the school bus shed, because it comes on just when the academic year begins. And that kind of reversion to historic ecosystem timing is being seen elsewhere in the Gulf.
This is the most normal, the most average year that we've had in a really, really long time.
Andrew Pershing is chief scientific officer at the Gulf of Maine Research Institute in Portland. He's the one who first marshaled the data showing that warming in the Gulf was outpacing the rest of the world's oceans. But so far this year, he says, the Gulf's water temperatures are the coolest since 2008.
The surface temperatures in the ocean have really closely tracked basically the 30-year average conditions.
It's a contrast to the rest of this decade, particularly 2012, when water temperatures ran almost 4 degrees above the historic mean through most of the year. Pershing says marine heat waves like that are becoming more frequent as climate change drives shifts in global currents, pushing more warm water and less cold into the Gulf of Maine.
We've seen the Gulf Stream shift further north. The Nova Scotia Labrador Current is weaker, right? And so that kind of allows this warm water to sort of pool and build up and really push on our region.
In the most extreme warm periods, marine ecosystems in the Gulf are disrupted. Harmful algae blooms proliferate. Some traditional fisheries falter. And seabirds raise fewer chicks. More southerly species such as butterfish, black sea bass, squid, and even seahorses make their way to the Gulf in larger numbers. But this year seems to have been a good one for some of the Gulf's historic inhabitants.
The cooler temperatures this spring and through June probably set things up pretty well.
Donald Lyons is a senior staffer in the Audubon Society's Seabird Restoration Program based in Bremen. He says the type of plankton that flourish at cooler temperatures in the spring are also the most nutritious for small fish such as herring and sand lance. Healthier populations of those fish, in turn, flow up the food chain to the benefit of higher-level predators such as puffin and tern. And that means more food for more baby birds.
Generally, birds were more successful raising chicks, raising young to fledging age, to when they can fly and leave the colony, much more successful than last year, and really probably above average across the board.
But the cooling trend in some of the Gulf's waters is not apparent well below the surface, and that's having a negative effect on other important species.
If you look in the deep waters, it's been 1 to 2 degrees warmer than average pretty consistently over the last 12 months.
Nick Reckert is a scientist at the Bigelow Laboratory for Ocean Sciences in East Booth Bay. He studies Gulf temperatures at depths of 100 meters and more. He wants to know what's going on with a particular zooplankton that hibernates down there, a rice-sized crustacean called Calanus finmarchicus. It's a staple in the diet of the endangered North Atlantic right whale, which have historically feasted in the eastern Gulf near Maine when the Calanus are starting to hibernate in late summer and early fall.
That's also when Calanus are the fattiest, because they pack on fats to overwinter, and so they're potentially a really valuable thing for right whales to be eating because they're so fatty. And at that time of year, it's more in the eastern Gulf of Maine, and that's when we've seen the big declines in Calanus and also the changes in right whale foraging behavior.
Reckert says the eastern Gulf's deep water is warming beyond the point where Calanus can hibernate effectively. That leaves them undernourished and less nutritious for the whales. And recently, the whales appear to have been bypassing the Gulf's Bay of Fundy, scouting farther north to Canada's Gulf of St. Lawrence, where whales are discovering Calanus in abundance. But those expeditions to areas where they were not expected have put the whales at higher risk of ship strikes and entanglements. Over the last 3 years, 20 of the animals, about 5% of their remaining population, were found dead in Canadian waters.
I think of them like climate refugees, right? They've had a food resource that they've relied on for years and years and years, and that reliability has been one of the keys to successful management.
Further complicating matters, says Andrew Pershing of the Gulf of Maine Research Institute, is that the relatively cooler surface temperatures seen in the Gulf earlier this year shifted abruptly upward at midsummer, setting records on some days. And early this month, he charted a major new development, a 4,000-square-mile blob of water, much warmer than the norm.
This more somewhat subtropical water that's sort of sitting off the Gulf of Maine, and you can see it in this, you know, in this map.
He points to a black mushroom-shaped mass to the southeast of Nova Scotia.
I've added some new colors because we're seeing more of these sort of conditions where, you know, this is 5-6 degrees Celsius above normal, which is a really, really big change in the ocean, close to a 10 degree Fahrenheit increase.
Pershing says summer-like conditions in the Gulf are now lasting a full month longer than they were just 20 years ago. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
And you can see scientist Andrew Pershing's map of that giant blob of warm water and other data at mainepublic.org. These stories are part of a week-long reporting project covering climate now by Maine Public and more than 300 other news outlets around the world. The series comes in advance of the United Nations Climate Action Summit on Monday, September 23rd in New York. There's more information at mainepublic.org/climatenow. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock with a look at the shipwrecks of Maine. I'm Nora Flaherty.